Hello there, everyone. We are back with season 3 of Psyched to Be With You. This episode is great. I sit down with Amanda Spellman, one of the amazing humans that I also happened to meet at PAX East last year. Amanda is a therapist working in the mental health kind of space, but has a background in social work. So in this episode, we really break down what therapy is, what it can look like, how it functions. We also discuss how being a geek can be both fun and also a very useful tool in the therapist's arsenal. We talk about a whole bunch of stuff, like moderation, what it's like watching TV shows at once an episode every week, like it used to be in the good old days. And there's a bit of a Twin Peaks rant, but it's all good, all and this and more extra. Starting off hot in the season, enjoy this one as much as I did, and I'll catch you at the end of the episode. Hello there, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of Psyched to Be With You with me, your host, Christopher Leach, aka Chimp195, but more importantly, you, the listeners, the chimpettes, the people that make the show what it is. We're back, it's season 3. The year is 2023. By the time you're listening to it, it's not now because I'm a prudent podcast host. We're going to be kicking off hot, same format, one episode a month. It's going to be big. We're getting straight stuck in. We've got one of the most wonderful humans I've met joining us to the start of this episode, this season. So we're getting in there. It's going to be great, full of vigor and energy, and it's going to be a great chat. I hope you'll enjoy it as much as I'm going to. And yeah, the theme tune is still a bop. We're ready to get into it. Let's just do it. All that remains for me to say is, my very special guest, if you could please tell us who you are and what you do.
My name is Amanda Spellman, and I'm a therapist in private practice.
Any relation to Sabrina?
No, but you would be, or maybe you wouldn't be surprised to hear that I get that question a lot now.
I mean, it's a nice little, like, I imagine that's a great icebreaker, right? Like, you know, relation, especially with the resurgence of, like, you know, the chilling adventures of Sabrina. That was a big thing.
Absolutely.
Many people, my old, you know, not my age, my old, remember the 90s sitcom that I begrudgingly rewatched on streaming services, and it has not aged terribly well.
Oh, really? That's interesting to hear.
Yeah, it's there's a general lack of diversity in the cast.
Makes sense.
And like, you can tell they really didn't understand what like a season wide plot was until like season 3.
Yeah.
Nostalgia.
I think it's
carried it a long way.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. Straight in there with a tangent. We love that. So you are a therapist. Mm-hmm. What is that like? What does that look like? What is that for anyone that doesn't know?
So so therapist could be lots of things. It could be massage therapy. It could be physical therapy. I am a mental health therapist. So yep. So you know, the image of human in chair, human on couch, talking about hard stuff.
Okay, excellent. So out of interest, a few people on the show that do like therapy amongst other things, so I'm very excited to delve a little bit deeper into this. Would you mind telling us a little bit about your academic background? Because as far as I'm aware, you can't just decide to be a therapist one day. You should definitely have some type of license and or degree, preferably both, to do that.
Yeah. So to do private practice in the U.S., you need an independent clinical license, which you get 2 years after you graduate with a master's. You have to work under somebody who has an independent clinical license. You have to pass a couple exams. And it's at that point that you can bill health insurance, which is an important part of opening a practice. I think also the time gating thing matters, because if you're going to do independent practice, you're usually doing it alone. And so you need to have some idea of what you're doing, I think, to be able to comfortably do that work.
I mean, I've been on the internet. I don't think it's wise to just let anyone go sort of like noodling around in the human brain slash psyche.
No.
Like, you know, that's like your brain surgeon coming at you with a knife and fork, and you're like, wait a minute, these are not quite the right tools for the job.
Exactly.
Yeah, and I
You
think
got it.
2 years is quite nice as well, because I think, like, you know, a lot of people get really excited, but like very, like, you know, full of energy. Pardon me. Not quite been hit by the reality of maybe the true nature of the work at that point, so you get 2 years more on that.
So you know what? It's really funny that you say that because the structure of, at least this is the case in the US, is that often the earliest jobs that you have in the mental health world are the most difficult. And private practice often ends up being a little bit easier. And I don't necessarily love that model and would like to see it a little bit flipped, right? Like you would want the most experienced human in the toughest work, but it's not always that way.
I mean, yeah, I feel like when you're new at something, you're either like thrown in the deep end, and like they have like a yeah, if you can survive this, you're good, you can keep going, or like you're the person making the tea, and you might not get beyond that. I feel like it's a very duplicitous model. It's interesting. So
Totally.
let's work from this and go backwards then. So private practice, you mentioned a master's. Like, what are your degrees in? What have you done? How did you find them? Like, as in, like, how
So
did you find doing them? Words.
it's a master's in social work.
Nice.
So I have a social work license. That is not the only license or the only degree that you can have that will lead you to private practice therapy, but it is one of them. And it took me a long time to get that master's because I took some breaks in between. I did an associate's level degree, took a break, and then a bachelor's level, and then I went straight to my master's after that. So altogether, I think it took me around 7 years. I didn't go right from high school.
I think that's like it's quite nice to hear that someone went on that non-linear journey, particularly in the UK. It's like right, you have to stay in education till you're 18 legally. The idea of higher education is very much, I'm gonna say, sold. Capitalism, bad as always, is like, guys, come to uni, it's magical. You'll get into a bit of debt. Don't worry about that. Don't think about the debt. Don't look at the debt. Think about the fun, the parties. You'll be away from home. Wee. Then, like, yeah, like, psychology has very much become the English degree of its day. Again, if you're that old to know what that means, you're really picking that up. So I think there's like a level of insidiousness there, because again, capitalism. And I think having that time to think about what you want to do and why you want to do it is really important.
Oh yeah, I agree wholeheartedly. And this I was often one of the older folks in my cohort and my classes, which was a unique experience. But having lived through it, it feels nice to be able to tell people that you can just do a thing. You don't have to be any particular age. You don't have to do it right away. You haven't lost or wasted time. One of the best therapists I ever met came out of a 20-something year marketing career and then went back for therapy. And I met this woman at a program I worked in, and she was incredible. She'd only been doing the work for 5 years. This was her second career. And so, I think my story and her story are evidence that, you can start something at any time.
I think that's the way it should be. And I think, you know, if like the phrase, like a vocation, right? Like, that's when you find like what you feel like you're meant to do. And I feel like a lot of the time we do stuff because we kind of need to do it. Love bashing on capitalism, but like, you know, it's like a live to
You
work,
gotta
not
play
work
the
to
game.
wait. No, hold on. Work to live, not live to work. That's it. Like, yeah, I have bills to pay, so I'm a, like, you know, stock shelves, flip burgers, whatever, gotta pay the bills. But if you're lucky enough to find what you want to do and you can pursue that, excellent.
Totally.
Yeah. Okay, so just I have no knowledge, so I'm just genuinely interested. What is social work? What's a social work degree look like? I have no idea.
What is social work? Man, that's a big question. How dare you?
For context, I asked that I feel like the difference, the definition in the UK is probably going to be different to the US, like many things are. But also, like, it's kind of one of those, everyone knows that it's a job, but not everyone is sure what they do, if that makes sense.
Sure. I think maybe a social work education asks you to look at a human as they exist in their environment and how they are impacted by all of the various systems that are a part of their lives. And so a social worker might be, you know, looking at what's available in this person's community, what resources do they have available to them. I think a social work degree also enables you to wear lots of different hats. It's not sort of like a college degree to private practice therapist pipeline. Not everybody does that. Some folks work in policy, work as directors of community organizations. And so, yeah, I would say succinctly, it's looking at a person and their environment and how their environment and systems impact them.
Okay, because, you know, believe it or not, some systems might be good for us that are in place.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
So can you then connect the dots? Because, I mean, you know, I speak about mental health a lot on the show, and it's very much framed in this kind of psychology lens. How did you kind of move from social work to mental health, like therapy? How does that kind of look on a you know, day-to-day basis kind of thing?
Well, I've worked in various places and with folks across the lifespan. And a lot of that work was always was limited. I only got to be with the humans that I worked with for a short while. And I always found myself wanting to know more about their lives and to be able to connect with them more deeply, I guess. And then, of course, the allure of private practice is being your own boss. And so I guess that's what led me down the path to being where I am now.
Okay. So being your own boss, like sort of business acumen, one might say, there's a lot of management that goes into that. How do you Absolutely. Find kind of balancing the, because therapy is quite serious business, it's quite hard work, and how do you find that and like managing, like, you know, paying taxes and managing appointments, like all that kind of additional management from the sitting across from the human and working with them?
So you get no preparation for that in school.
So this is one of my big bugbears. We've had Dr. Poppy Gibson at the end of last season, like worked in education. We had a big rant about this. There are just some skills that are just omitted from the school curricula. Like understanding what taxes are and how to do them would be really helpful. And yet I know Pythagoras' theorem. Make that make sense.
Right. And so I had to learn all of that independently. And so I think that is a barrier to entry for private practice, is you need to have some level of support to be able to seek out those services if these are things you do not know. So I had to pay a CPA to educate me, so a certified accountant, to educate me on taxes. I have a billing service that I use, because if I didn't, I would need to do all that work myself. And so that's overhead cost. You know, you have to, well, I think it was very important for me to find an office that really fit my values. So gender neutral bathrooms, a well-lit parking lot, access to public transportation, handicap accessibility. And so that costs money to rent those places. And so while there is a high need, and my suspicion is most folks wouldn't have any trouble finding clients, there's a startup cost that I don't think is really talked about until you decide I want to get into this. And then it's like, oh, there's a lot of stuff I have to do to make this happen.
Do you think that's in part due to the fact that a lot of people, like, I know, again, UK-centric is the only sort of real space of my knowledge, which is kind of like so you want to start a business, get a loan from the bank. It's just where everyone assumes you're going to start. And again, like a lot of people kind of, you know, maybe on a bit of a bad bet, kind of just take a loan out and I'm going to start a business and maybe don't think about some of the more logistical things. Like, you know, you mentioned a whole load of stuff that made my ears very happy, that you were considerate of those kind of things. Out of interest, we've had, again, a few other therapists on the show. Would you describe yourself as a geek therapist? Do you work particularly in, like, the geeky realm? Like, do you use that to because, you know, let's take that step back, actually. What does it mean to sit across a human and do therapy?
Oh, my gosh. Okay. That's a heck of a step back.
I'll go make a cup of tea. I'll let you answer.
Yeah. What does it mean?
Because again, I feel like it's a word that we're hearing more and more, but I feel like maybe for listeners, they don't know what therapy actually is. There's a lot of misconception, a lot of like,
sure.
I feel like there's this kind of meme that, you know, therapy is done by someone who is like, just we're wanting to make lots of money and hear about people's like problems, you know, like there's a lot of negative stereotyping around it.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's true.
Or you think of, like, you know, Freud. That's, like, the other one.
That is also true. And part of me does want an office with a fireplace and a chaise lounge and to be surrounded by lots of books. I mean, I think I could work really well in that environment. But I think, not traditionally, but I think often, therapy does not look like that.
Wait, you mean I don't get to lie on a chaise long and go, it all started in childhood?
Unfortunately. Well... you could lay on my couch. I have a couch that is big enough for an adult human to lay on. So you could totally lay on my couch.
Okay, so you've got a couch. That's excellent.
I do have a couch. So comfy seating, sure. I think I have lost sight of what the original question was. Could you ask it again?
what sort of, like, does actual therapy look like?
What does actual therapy look like?
How is it done?
How is it done? How's it done? How do I do it? So you contact me. We have a phone chat to see if I would be a good fit for you and have competency to help you. We talk about logistics and then you decide, yes, I think you would be a good fit. So we would either meet via telehealth, which has been really nice, or we would meet in my office for 45 minutes to an hour once a week. We would come up with goals together and then we would work to meet those goals. So we would set benchmarks for you to practice. We would talk about the ins and outs of those things. We might talk about your experiences and how they sort of shaped your behavior. And then we would work on changing that behavior to better fit your sense of values and the kind of life that you want to live.
Okay. I'm not currently looking for a therapist, but I'm sold. That sounds wonderful. And you also have a very soothing voice, which I think helps.
Thanks. Thank you. Okay. I have been told that before.
Yeah, it's one of those beautiful features of the podcast. I've heard such a great range of accents and voices. I get to bring that to other people's ears.
Yeah, you have a very nice one too. Very suited to podcasting, streaming, speaking.
I have a face and voice for radio. Fun fact, I did actually have a radio show in college. That is no joke.
Did you?
The Boohoos and Blues Hour with Chris.
That doesn't surprise me at all. Knowing what I know about you, that doesn't surprise me.
It went out Fridays at midnight till 1 a.m.
Beautiful.
And I used to think it was me, and there was, like, you know, that one older gentleman that was really into blues music that worked nights, just listening along.
let me bring this back to therapy. I think another important part of therapy is not overestimating your power, right? Like, you learn this in therapy school, is like, your job is not to fix anyone. You are a very small part of that human's life, but that small part matters. And so to that one man in the middle of the night who found company in your voice and your music, you know, like, that is important.
Oh, have I just been therapized, also, yeah, like, live on the show? Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, you just got therapized. Finger guns.
Boom. Finger,
That's how we
nice.
do it.
That's oof. I activated your trap card. You were ready. You were like, aha. Okay. All right. Excellent. So that's like typically what it looks like. That's excellent. I feel like I've got a much greater understanding of it as a process thing now. And then you said you were a geeky therapist. How does that build on that sort of foundation?
Sure. So, first and foremost, I am a geeky human, and so that's part of my identity. And me being a geeky therapist is sort of sharing a little bit of that identity with the folks that I work with. And not just geeky, but I mean, if you've ever been called or considered a misfit, a weirdo, or an offbeat, as many geeks may have, I certainly did when I was in school.
You just read off my yearbook.
Exactly. Those are my superlatives as well. And so I work with folks who are a part of fringe communities, like maybe folks in the kink community, folks who are in polyamorous relationships, folks who have, fringe interests. And me being a geeky therapist means that we celebrate those parts of you and don't view them as inherently problematic and look for ways to use the parts of you that are very important to you to enrich your life. And it also is a very great, easy rapport button for working with kids.
Yeah, I can imagine that to be very helpful.
Yeah.
Okay, so a few things that I'd like to probe there. The first thing is I love that as like using the parts of you that are important to you to enhance things. That's like audible caramel for my brain. I enjoy that immensely. That is just like, yes, it's so wholesome, it's so wonderful. Yeah, I've got to, because it's a podcast and I've got to get that clip that I can use to try and get people to listen to the episode. But you talk about people from the kink community. No kink shaming in this house.
No,
But
absolutely
like,
not.
how do you manage that in a professional capacity?
Sure. So that, a person might contact me and they might be a member of the kink community, and we may never talk about that. But as a kink affirming therapist, I'm not going to look at that part of your life as inherently problematic or make it the focus of our work together, but I am going to be sensitive to the fact that this is a part of your life and it may impact you in different ways. Like a person who's maybe in a public facing profession but also a member of the kink community, that introduces, potential issues and complications, and we can talk about that in a way that's non-judgmental.
Okay, wow. That, like, did you have that answer rehearsed? Because that was just spot on. Like,
Thank you.
bang, bang, bang. Easy money, let's go. So do you kind of, you talk of like as being sort of like geeky and sort of, we talk about fringe community. Do you kind of like engage with sort of like geeky things within therapy? Like, do you use that as like a touch point for like metaphor or engagement? Because I mean, I know on the show before we've spoken like from Dr. Sarah Hayes, it's a bit of a game to grow, and they kind of do like TTRPG therapy, that type of thing. I'm check out all these other guests I'm name dropping. It's all good. The links below, wherever you found this episode.
Yes. They are all wonderful. I love all of the people that you've listed. I've had the privilege of meeting Sarah with you. I also was able to take the Game to Grow mental health track for TTRPG therapy. They are wonderful. I moderate in their Discord too.
Nice.
They're a really great group of humans. And so how do I use that in the therapy space? Well, sometimes I use games as a way of doing a thing and having a conversation. So it can be helpful, I think, as a buffer to be playing a game and then to have a casual chat, especially with kids
A
who
casual
might
therapy chat.
casual therapy chat. Yeah, because it could be hard to have this adult you don't know staring you down, asking you very personal questions, and you, maybe an 11-year-old,
That
are
idea just made my heartbeat increase. Like, it's really,
right?
I was like, oh
Yeah,
no.
it would for me. me too, and this is my job. And so we were playing a game together, and it can feel a little less threatening because we've got this like space that we're both inhabiting. Sometimes I use games as the activity. So for instance, maybe we're talking about how to be a little bit more flexible, or maybe we're talking about how life can change really fast and suddenly. So we're playing Flux. Have you ever played that card game?
Oh, Flux is so good.
Right? It's so good. And there are so many flavors for, you know, like various interests. There's Cthulhu, there's nature, there's zombies.
So for those that don't know, like really, really simply, and this is the springboard of the conversation, is Flux is a card game. Where you have your dealt a number of cards, and the basic rule is draw one, play one. However, the cards that you can play greatly alter the rule. So you can have the object is to get rid of all your cards, right? And you have to like match them
so
up.
The so in Flux, there is a goal.
There we go.
And you have to meet that goal.
Oh,
but
like half the certain
can
items.
Change. Can yeah. Change.
So you might start with draw one, play one, but I might be able to make it draw three, and then it's draw three, play one. And suddenly the game changed.
Exactly.
Oh, it's so...
Yeah.
Flux is
and
so
sometimes
good.
It can change in your favor, and sometimes it can change and you are just about to win, and that can be really frustrating. And so we use that as a way of talking about, you know, these things that can happen to us in our lives.
That kind of stuff, to me, is like literal genius. Because like, you know, look, cause just because I feel like so many people maybe... have not had the opportunity to be equipped with the ability to understand things in that way. And doing a game that is fun, everyone's like, yeah, I'll play this game, this seems cool, look at the cool art, and I love, you know, sci-fi, and you're playing the sci-fi version, and then, like,
exactly. You
go, ah, but isn't this like when that thing happened in life, and you thought you were about to win, and then you win, and you're like, what?
Yeah. Exactly.
I just said what you said, but just with sound effects. I don't know why I did that.
I like the sound effects. I think they were a great addition.
I random tangent. I do like a little bit of teaching, and I teach first year undergrads like how to do SPSS, and I like to add sound effects. And I'm like, it's just more fun. We're gonna move our variable into the variable box, which got whoosh. We just do that. There we go. We're just helping it along, helping it on its way. I very much Bob
Ross
it.
All right. I have a question for you.
Whoa.
What is SPSS?
So I couldn't say what the letters mean. It's the statistical analytics program designed by our friends at IBM, in no way connected to this podcast, but like it's like the big, one of the most used sort of premium softwares for analyzing data in psychology.
That is really cool.
It's really not.
Listen, I'm a therapist, and a common therapist trope is that therapists are bad at math. And I fulfill and espouse that stereotype. I'm terrified of math. And so whenever people talk about doing math well or incorporating math into our shared mental health profession, I think that's really cool.
Stats are not fun. And my students would say the same thing.
But they're very important.
So I definitely frame it in the context of, I'm not here to make you a statistician. I borrow this phrase from Elizabeth Kilmer, actually, Dr. Elizabeth Kilmer from Game to Grow. Big fan. Huge friend. Uh-huh. Friend of the show. And she's like, you know, she said this, you know, I'm not here to make you a statistician, but I'm here to make you a smart consumer. So when you see things on like the bottom of like your TV ad, like, you know, 9 out of 10 people say, and on the bottom it's like, we interviewed 10 people. like, what
exactly.
Does that really mean?
Yeah.
Like, it's not actually that statistically valid. And to prose that, prompt those questions, as well as like, here's how we write this in psychology.
Yeah. No, I was just going to say, like, what are we doing in the mental health field if not giving out tools?
Exactly,
you're doing.
Right?
You're giving people tools to use for life.
You come to my class, you like leave with like a free item you can equip later on if you need it.
Yeah.
When it's like that one stats boss.
Exactly.
I've been told that like I teach as if I'm doing a set of stand up. I try and bring that level of energy to it because I think it's engaging. Which
it's
is why
good.
When I'm like,
yeah.
Okay, let's look at the data. These are the stats. Let's grab these stats. Whoosh! Look, here's the we press the buttons we need. Here's the table. These are the numbers you need. There we go.
Yeah.
Lovely.
You're delivering the content in a way that is engaging. That's good stuff.
I try, you know, I bring the lines between my life as like an academic sounds like the worst game you've ever heard of. my life as an academic and my life as a content creator, the lines are very thin, if not blurred entirely. Mm-hmm. You know, like when you're like, you've rubbed out a line in pencil with like a rubber or an eraser, as it were in the US, and you're like, you're not quite sure if it's there, and you're like, is it? I can't quite. That's the line. That's how thin it is. It may not be there at all. It might be the thinnest layer of like granite you've ever seen.
We love transferable skills.
Yes. Yes, we do. Mm-hmm. Okay, great. Loving this conversation already, but I'm going to take this another step further. You're a geeky human.
Okay.
What is that like when you're not in work? What do you get up to?
Oh, when I'm not at work, I like to play video games. I like to read.
Also,
I like to watch TV and movies. I like to play games with friends, whether that be board games, tabletop games. I would consider myself a novice GM. So lots of geeky stuff.
Big fan. Okay, mm-hmm. So I'm going to throw this conversation in that. If you're not interested in Twin Peaks, tune out for the next 5 minutes or so, because we're gonna chew the fat on this one for a little minute.
Yes!
We do occasionally just send each other like Twin Peaks memes. That is a part of our repertoire. Can we just talk about how great Twin Peaks is? Like,
can we? I don't know, because when people ask me what one of my favorite shows is, I say Twin Peaks. And then they ask, should I watch it? And I say, in good conscience, I cannot recommend this show to anyone. But do I love it? Yes.
Okay. But the only reason you can't recommend it in good conscience is because do you have all the hours required to watch it all, then watch the film, listen to the several audiobooks, / read the books, then watch them all again in canonical order, removing the really rubbish stuff from season 2 that David Lynch wasn't involved in, then watching The Return again, knowing what you know. And, you know, that sort of thing. Like, that is a big investment.
Absolutely. It is.
And having done that myself.
But it's worth it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's consumed all of the Twin Peaks media, the way it was made, the order it was made. Did it again in canonical order. Whoa, different picture.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And the content is so good. Like, I love, between season 1 and season 2, David Lynch's daughter wrote The Secret Diary of Laura Palmer. Like, mm-hmm. And she was a teenage girl writing in the way of a teenage girl, and it's so brilliant, it's spine tingling, and it's just so thematically great.
Yeah, it is. It's very good, and all of the actors are very like, well, I guess I can't speak for all of them, but many of them are like still very wholesomely connected, and they do a lot for the Twin Peaks community, which is really nice.
Twin Peaks TTRPG when is my question?
Oh, I know. Yes, I'm in.
Like, you could really go places with that.
You sure could. Mm-hmm.
Okay,
could go places.
So let's go real. Let's really dive in. Have you got a favorite fan theory?
A favorite fan theory? Oh my gosh.
I'm saying that like I know them. I don't.
Right. I'm thinking like I also don't. The period of my life in which I consumed Twin Peaks was a long time ago. I watched The Return.
The period of my life when I consumed Twin Peaks. That's how big a commitment is, like, people and persons listening.
Absolutely. Favorite fan theory? I don't know. I could tell you who my favorite character is, let's have you try and guess.
Oh gosh, that's not. I don't even want to guess. I'm just gonna get it wrong.
Major Garland Briggs.
Okay, Major Briggs is an excellent character. To be fair,
excellent character.
Cooper. You know.
Yeah, that tracks.
Yeah, it's such.
He's a good hero.
It's just such a strange and wonderful show where everything makes sense while also making no sense at all.
I actually use some Cooper advice in my practice sometimes.
Nice.
The every day, once a day, give yourself a gift. Whether that's,
I cite that a lot as well, like.
like whether it's like a little cat nap, a really nice cup of coffee, cup of tea, but yeah, a time with yourself and giving yourself something that brings you joy, I think is a worthy endeavor every day.
See, just wonderful stuff. Do you reckon we'll ever get more Twin Peaks? Do you think there is an end beyond the ending we got?
Do I think there's an ending? Absolutely not. Do I think we'll get more Twin Peaks? I think it's possible because I think everybody involved seems interested in doing more. But whether there's an ending, I don't think so.
I've had this debate a few times, and I. In true David Lynch fashion, I don't think there is an ending. I don't think it's meant to be an ending. You know, like,
Exactly.
so one of my favorite fan theories is, because I've just recalled it as we were talking about this, so I now sound really fucking clever. But like, is that like the whole story is about like, I won't do full spoilers because I do want people to actually engage with it if they want to. But you know, at the end when that thing happens and it's like,
I
I'll see
do.
you again soon, Richard. There's like a whole argument that like the entire thing is all about like essentially Kyle MacLachlan's hubris, like you know being the hero solving the case that couldn't be solved and how that is in of itself actually problematic and gets other people hurt. Looking at
Yes,
Annie.
I would co-sign that totally.
Okay, yeah, I think that's one of my favorites because it's just like I
Yeah,
can't.
that's a good one.
The show is bananas. I can't express it any more succinctly than that. Like it really is, but it's also
Yeah.
hypnotically enjoyable.
Yes. Yes.
I you know, again, I rewatched it. I watched it the second time through. The bad quote unquote episodes were actually as bad second time round. If you kind of look at them as the lens through a lens of like, I'm gonna look at these in isolation. Like it's like anime filler. It's obviously filler, but like it still pertains. Enough whimsy that it's not like terrible, you know?
Totally. I think it's also important to mention that this show has some pretty heavy content warnings.
Oh,
And so if
yeah.
it is something that you want to engage in, I would recommend doing so cautiously because there are some really, really difficult content. Some really horrific things happen.
It is flipped up, let me tell you.
It is truly a story about the evil that men do. Not gendered, but the evil that humans do. And so go with caution.
Yes, it is. It is, yeah, about the most awful things that humanity can do. Yeah. So, but it's so good.
It is
Like,
very
but
good.
again,
It's
I
very
am
good.
someone who enjoys like very dark humor, very challenging sort of sci-fi dystopia is my favorite genre. I'd go so far as to say Twin Peaks kind of fits into that.
Yeah,
It's
I would say so.
dystopian because it's about humanity's evil, and it's definitely freaking sci-fi. Yeah, okay, awesome. We'll ding the Twin Peaks klaxon, we'll put that down.
We did it.
Anyone who wasn't interested, they've tuned back in, they've skipped the video, it's all good. have you got any like other things that you would say like you're a big fan of? Like any sort of like games that you're playing at the minute or recommend me a TV show, I'm not watching or anything at the moment.
Things I'm a big fan of. Well, I guess sort of piggybacking off of Twin Peaks, I really like the formula of a supernatural mystery that takes place in a small mountain town. So I like a lot of shows that fit that formula, I guess. And so recently I just finished 1899, which is by the same folks who did that show Dark on
Oh, yeah.
Netflix. And I found it very interesting. And I don't know if you did. Have you seen True Detective? That show, True
Oh,
Detective.
yeah. I love True
Okay,
Detective.
so when season one came out, it wasn't released in a batch like shows often are. It was one episode.
Back in our day, you had to watch it once a week.
Yeah,
You had to wait a whole week
you
to
had to
watch the
watch
next one.
it.
Do you remember 24 with Keith O'Sullivan?
Oh
And it
yes.
was 24 episodes, and it was a whole day. I cannot, kids these days, I said it, Kids these days will not understand the excruciating pain of waiting 7 days. And you couldn't record stuff back in these days. If your butt was not in your seat on the channel for 9 o'clock on a Sunday, you missed it. You'd have no hope. You'd hope one of your friends taped it, actually put it to tape so you could watch it.
Yeah.
The pain of just like having a draw drop and ending to an episode and going,
yes,
I've got an entire 7 days to try and survive now.
Right. And so much like Twin Peaks and True Detective Season 1, after each episode, you've got all these theories, I saw this, what could this mean? And that's all very exciting. And I think while 1899, you can watch all the episodes at once, I think it is another show that you can do that with, where there's like lots of symbolism, there's, you know, lots of hidden meanings and connections that you can make. And so in that way, I think it fits that supernatural mystery kind of it's very good, and I would recommend you check it out.
Okay, excellent. On that as well, I think, just, I had this conversation recently, but I, like many, many other people, watch Game of Thrones when it was broadcast weekly. And like, there was a point where you could watch it like in the UK as it went out in the US, but it was like, you know, daft o'clock in the morning. But when it was an evening broadcast, like the UK broadcast time, you know, we'd all get together with a few mates, we'd go to someone's flat, we'd watch it, like, and then we'd spend 3 hours afterwards discussing it and be like, well, compared to the books, they made this change. And that was, I mean, especially with the later seasons, more fun than the actual show.
I know, I agree.
It was that like camaraderie of the discussion and the development that was more engaging.
Totally.
Mm-hmm. Get around a kitchen table with a cuppa, you like, you know, argue a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
There'd be that like one guy who's like just watched the TV show and like doesn't know anything about the books and is like, I thought it was good. You're like, no, you're wrong.
I used to work at a program and where folks were inpatient. And this was like really in the height of Game of Thrones, and I was watching it weekly. I was theorizing, I was cross-referencing, and I became known as the Game of Thrones person at my office. And people would come from other units and other buildings to come in and have a chat with me. Even the person that delivered our water would come in.
literal water cooler conversation.
Yeah, literal water cooler conversation. Yeah, I'm only just realizing that. That's really funny. Yeah. I think any show that invites that sort of thing is something I really love.
It's lost on these kids that can just beboop it all in one go.
Yeah.
It's just not the same. I think like you can analyze like an entire show. Like, have you seen it all? Like, yes, you know, like, you know, you can do that, and like there's definitely, you have more of an arc to work with. But I don't know, like yourself, as you kind of hinted, that looking for the pieces of the puzzle yourself is kind of more fun. Is, you know, something that I suppose I kind of supplement that with games, I guess, you know, trying to work something out, like that Rubik's cubing it. Like I know for example that you've played like bits of a Death's Door and things like that. That's kind of like that kind of game where you got to figure out what works and learn the patterns of the enemies and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
I've said things like that way too many times. Don't worry about it.
Tickles the same part of your brain. Totally.
Yeah. Are you playing anything at the moment?
Right now, I am at the end game of Pokemon Violet. Yes, purple's the best color. You would
purple's
agree.
Purple's the best color, yeah.
It's, despite its issues, a very, very fun game.
I mean, I've heard these arguments, okay, that you could have a big discussion about the problems with the industry and the fact they're willing to put out broken products and stuff, take an extra month or two to ship it, okay, whatever, all these discussions. Big problems with the game industry. Surprise, surprise, who knew? Okay. Right. My defense to this is, arguably one of my favorite games of all time is Final Fantasy VII. And that game is held together by, like, paper mache and duct tape. Mm. And I still love it. Okay, so totally. A game being broken does not necessarily make it bad. That's not an excuse. It doesn't defend the fact that, like, you know, at least nowadays you can patch it and make it better retrospectively. It shouldn't be sent out broken. Like, Like, if you ordered a record and it came broken and they're like, don't worry, we'll send you a digital download, I'd be annoyed. But at least you can fix it nowadays. Again, back in the day, if a game was broken, yeah. I mean, Superman 64, looking at you.
You got what you got.
And that was it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's still fun to play.
It's still fun to play. And I have a deep, dark secret that I'm about to reveal to you, is that this will be the first Pokemon game I've ever finished. I've never fought the Elite Four. I never got that far. Yeah.
Out of, like, time, interest? Like, what was
I think both. You know, I like a lot of games, and Pokemon, while it's been a consistent interest of mine, not really at the top. And so I would play them for a while, and then, you know, I'd get bored and move on to something else. But this one really kept me engaged and wanting to play, wanting to get to that end game, wanting to do the next thing. I really think this is, like, the best Pokemon has ever been.
Bold. Bold. Really, we're going to make that the clip.
I said what I said. I'll stand by my words.
Mm-hmm. I admire that and I respect it. So I'm like, I'm like into it. I'm like, yes, this is fun. I love it. But like, to, you know, if you're listening to this and you've ever seen my stream, you'll understand how the way I play games is incredibly whimsical. And I kind of picked this one. I was like, okay, this is really fun. I love this. And I was like, you know what? I really should go back and finish the Delta episode of Omega Ruby so I can get all the, like, rare ones that I wanted, and then actually finally export them from Pokemon Bank, because I haven't done that yet.
Uh-huh.
And the service is going to expire in March. I should probably do that, because I have got Mons from the original Pokemon Ruby cartridge that have gone right the way through. I once borrowed a friend's copy of Pokemon Black / White, I can't remember which, in order to transfer my Pokemon to the DS Gen. I've moved them. I've got the boys. I've got several. Okay, right, you've started me. I'm going to finish. I have Pokemon Colosseum is the bane of my existence, okay?
Uh-huh.
Tell you for why. I tried everything to get that Ho-Oh. And this, again, I'm apparently just an angry old man this episode. But, like, back in, you know, even the mid-noughties, okay, internet FAQs and Let's Plays were not a thing. You might get a walkthrough. A lot of it was misinformation. Again, how many times were you told you could revive Aerith on FF7? Do you know what I'm saying? You know, leave the game on for 8 weeks and she'll just be alive. All that kind of stuff. And it was not clear how to unlock this Ho-Oh. So I have multiple duplications of all those purified Shadow Pokemon, because I had to make several new games. All of this culminating in a massive all-nighter as teenage me stayed up to beat those 100 battles in a row with my...
Because
it didn't matter how you did it. With my Ruby level 100s just slipping through it. And finally got that Ho-Oh. And I was like, now I can go to bed. So I have, like,
Now I can rest.
I have, like, several, like, Tyranitars and, like, several batches of, like, the rare dogs from, like, Gen 2. Just all, like, several overpowered Espeons and Umbreons. Like,
well, how special is this? Like, how many years and how many, I don't know, generations of humans does Pokemon connect? Because you were talking about how does my geekiness sort of overlap with my therapy world? There's so many of my younger clients, you know, still play Pokemon. Mm-hmm. And so to be able to talk candidly with them about it is, you know, an easy way for us to connect. And it's just really cool how, I don't know.
So it's not super clear in the video. I'll show you personally before we sign off. But, like, above me, you can see my collection of Nintendo handhelds over there. I actually have some original, like, Game Boy carts of Pokemon, like Yellow and Silver and Gold and stuff, like, so.
That's awesome.
I've been playing it since I was yay high, you know.
Since you were a wee lad.
A wee lad, yes, that exactly. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Anyway, I what the heck we were talking about? I just went on a rant about Pokemon.
You were asking what was I playing or what was I up to?
All that to say, yeah, I was going to move the boys from Pokemon Bank to Pokemon Home. and it's going to cost me money at least to transfer them because I'll have to pay for a subscription to move them and then presumably forget about them until Pokemon Home gets updated in Violet.
Yep, waiting for that for sure.
Anywho, so anything else that you sort of get up to outside of it? Because we mentioned TTRPG, you're a novice GM. What do you play? Mm-hmm. Do you enjoy it? What species and classes do you enjoy playing?
So what do I play? I play and run Dungeons and Dragons games. I play and run Call of Cthulhu games. I play and run Alice is Missing, which is a really fun tabletop game, and Kids on Bikes. My goal for 2023 is for I would like to either play or run a game of Dads on Lawnmowers, which is so. If he looks directly into the camera,
that's like a The Office, like I'm sorry, what kind of moment?
Yes,
like,
so Dads on Kids on Bikes. What do you think of? You think of Goonies, you think of Stranger Things, Kids on Bikes getting up to stuff, solving mysteries.
Yeah.
Well, so they elaborated on that and came out with Kids on Brooms, so magical children solving problems, getting up to stuff.
Spellmans.
Yeah, you got it. And yeah. Then I think for a charity event, they released Dads on Lawnmowers. And so that's exactly what you think is... dads, well, I guess I don't know if this translates to the UK, but the US, if you imagine like a classic dad, it's cargo shorts, operating a grill, you know, standing at the window talking about their lawn. So it takes that sort of like classic dad image and turns it into a little tabletop game. So I want to play it someday.
I mean, I'm nodding along, not aggressively, but assertedly. I'm like, yeah, that uh-huh. tracks. That tracks. When like sit-down lawnmowers like really came into circulation in the UK, oh wow, it's all you could hear about for months.
Exactly. That's
people
exactly
like,
it.
I can now sit down on the lawnmower. We're flying.
What a treat.
What a mm-hmm. treat. Mm-hmm. I, for one, I'm glad I have a yard and don't have to mow the lawn, but also... I do have to brush the leaves, and that is, leaves are my natural born enemy.
Oh, yeah. It's tough. I just sort of let them be.
Like, I walk into the yard, and it's like, I've been like, leaf attacked. Razor leaf, just like, ah, my face.
Oh, I know.
Cheeky Pokemon reference that I'm back to earlier in the podcast.
Look at you.
We're unedited, ladies, gentlemen, and people. Unedited.
So yeah, I play tabletop games. I like to garden. I like to watercolor for only my enjoyment. So it's not as though
whoa,
I am
whoa, hold
a...
on. You mean you don't monetize your spare time?
Yeah, you got
you're not,
it.
You're not doing it right. You gotta be streaming your Let's Plays. You gotta be streaming your painting.
I know.
You should have like a plant cam / a blog. Or some TikToks of your plants growing.
Right. I like to say that I'm not very good at watercolor, and that is not a, that's not like being self-deprecating, but only to say that you do not have to be instructor level good to enjoy something. I just like putting paint on paper, and that's good enough.
I take that view with like playing guitar and like singing. Like I'm not, I you know, I could do an open mic night if someone threatened my existence to not do so. And, like,
yes,
people, I wouldn't get
I
booed
heard.
Off. But, like, mm-hmm. I wouldn't say I'm good. I just, you know, kind of just do it. It's fun. I enjoy it.
Yeah. Yeah. You can just be, like, kind of okay at a thing. And that's fine.
Yeah. You don't have to, like, be a professional at everything you enjoy.
No.
Have you played, TTRPG-wise, have you played anything with the 2D20 system?
No, I haven't.
So I have GM'd some June Adventures in the Emporium for some friends.
Oh, right, I recall.
And, like, it's really fun. I think it's a very nice introductory system. You're only ever sort of mm-hmm. adding two numbers together and trying to roll under it. It's funny if you've played it with anyone who's played D&D because you're trying to roll for ones and, like, 20s are bad. But the joke is that, like, if you've got that one set of dice that always let you down with D&D, perfect for this.
Yeah, that's interesting. How
so
do you like it?
I really enjoy it. I know the universe really well because I've read the books through twice. So, like, the first 80 pages of the player's handbook is just lore. And I'm like, yeah, I know. It's all good. Don't worry. I know about the universe. I know
wow.
about Mad Dave. You know, so me and him were way back. Way back. And, like, yeah, it's fun. I think it's really nice to sort of co-op the world. Like, as a GM, I'm sure you'll appreciate this, you can plan for everything, and your players will be like, we're going to chase the guy down the alley. And I'm like, okay, do you not want to go and... No, we're going to chase him, and we're going to catch him and interrogate him. And I'm like, okay, but are you sure? He doesn't know
much. You
know
what? That also happens in the therapy space where you and your client may have come up with a plan. You've got a thing that you're going to talk about. I've got questions prepared. I might even have an activity planned, if, you know, especially if I'm working with a kid, and they might come in and they have something completely different that they want to do. And so we take the plan and we huck it behind us and we start from scratch.
Do you not like, I don't know, put it away in the box and, like, you know, come back to it later? Just, it's gone.
Just gone. Get rid of it.
Gone. Wow. Boom. Put it on the trash pile. Set it on fire.
Yep. Set it on fire.
I call that adaptability.
Yeah.
Gotta adapt to the situation.
Yeah. Sometimes you just gotta go where your person is going, or go where your party is going.
Players, am I right? Unpredictable. Wild things.
Yeah.
Oh. Okay, excellent. Have you got, like, any like new releases that you're hyped about in sort of any of the domains you enjoy?
What am I hyped about? I'm really looking forward to playing the new God of War game.
Nice.
I think the most recent installment of that was just one of the most beautiful games I've ever played.
So you're excited for like Ragnarok, right? That's come out. That came out like
November, for
2020?
Ragnarok.
Yeah.
Yep. It just came out around the same time as Pokemon. So I've been absorbed
with
Pokemon. But when
you stuck,
I made a choice. Yep. So when that sort of starts to dwindle for me, I will probably pick up God of War. And actually, when I first played that game, it was around January, February. So I think it would be kind of sweet to play the next one in the same time frame.
Okay, I like that. I like that, like, internalized sentimentality.
Yeah.
That's quite nice.
Mm-hmm.
Quite nice. I enjoy that.
To
circle back around, because I do have notes and I do host a podcast, and I do so semi-professionally. Would you be willing to just tell us a little about, like, what led you to social work? Like, what was the inspiration? What sort of led you there? You know, like, why do you do what you do? Like, we've heard, obviously, you have all these great hobbies that you integrate. But how did you get there?
How did I get there? When I was young, I needed the support of social work and social services for me and my family. And I ultimately wanted to be a part of that. I was very helped and held and supported by the mental health services in my area, and wanted to give back and to do that myself.
All right, that's super wholesome. I love that. I'm moved. That's amazing. Like, yeah, I want to give back to a system that helped me. Well, let's be honest, there's not that many systems that help folks nowadays. I'm super cynical this episode. It's December 22 as we're recording this. It's a Sunday. I should be so much more happy than I'm sounding. Like,
you know what, though? You are where you are, and that's okay.
Big grandpappy energy, that's how I roll.
I love that.
All year round, any time of day. Big grumpy. Mm-hmm. I forgot to add, actually, I usually do like a how we met bit at the start. You are yet another guest that I knew from the Take This Discord and subsequently met at PAX East. Which
it's
is a nice
really great
segue.
Group of humans.
Segue to our next section where we talk about that. Hey, look at me being a pro host. So we talk about spare time. You moderate in the, as you mentioned, Game to Grow Discord and the Take This Discord. What's that look like? What's being a mod? Why is the Take This Discord one of the best places on the internet?
Oh my gosh. Being a mod is really fun.
Okay, so let
As
me stop you there.
especially
Listeners, that means that Amanda really enjoys the power over other people, being able to bonk the little band gavel. That's all that means. Just clearing that
Well,
up.
I have yet to bonk a single person in the Take This Discord.
Okay, sure.
We don't get that many. It is usually just like bots and things that we have to bonk, but usually the folks that come into the Discord are always very respectful of the rules and are ha genuinely happy to be there. And so we rarely have to wield the ban hammer. It collects dust, which is a good thing.
Okay, all right, fair, fair.
Yeah.
Sorry, what else is being a mod like?
It being a mod is fun. It is like a sense of belonging and connection is really important. And so having that as being a volunteer in the Take This Discord, and of course, Take This bridging the gap between mental health and the gaming sphere is something that's important to me, important to you. I think something that's really special about being a mod in the Take This Discord is just the sort of the culture that they've cultivated, that we've cultivated, which is a culture of self-care first, a culture of a team that really supports each other. And so if anybody feels like there's something that's come up that they don't have the tools to manage, other people are there to chime in. We have five person crafted responses to things where five people collaborated on one response to make sure that it was reflective of Take This values, reflective of our own personal values. And so that's been really special, I guess, being a part of that team.
And former guest on the show, check it out, season two. Dr. Kelly Dunlap, obviously best CM around.
Yes,
Absolute
she's
quality.
mom mod.
But I do think in the general space that I say this as someone who sort of streams and stuff and operates their own Discord, modding is a lot of effort. It's a spoon to use voluntarily. When you are primarily just a volunteer, or even just a viewer, or just someone like just someone taking part, mods underappreciated, and I think a lot of people don't know what it means to really go into like the modding role. I think because if you go into like a, I'm gonna say a thriving or bustling kind of Twitch chat, you might not even notice the mods are there because it's just so busy. But they're keeping an eye on everything. If you go into a busy Discord, and like the Take This Discord is busy with a capital B. Like, you guys must be keeping a lid on a lot of stuff.
I suppose I don't know. It doesn't feel that way. I think Dr. Dunlap's done a really great job of providing a framework for people to, like some the rules, the things that you are introduced to when you come into the Discord, some of like the automated stuff. So I think it's laid out pretty clearly for folks on what's okay and what's not okay. And like I said, the kinds of people that are drawn to Take This are the kinds of people that want to be there. And so they read the rules and they behave within them. And so, I guess in that way, moderating can be laborious, is like I can't mute a channel that I don't want to look at necessarily. I have to be reading everything.
Really sucks
But
if you're not a
yeah.
fan of the puns channel.
It really, and I would call myself in that camp. She's not a pun enjoyer, but I do moderate. I do have to read it.
I begrudgingly am forced to look at all the puns and all the memes.
It's awful. It really is. But yeah, I think so. If it is set up in such a way that a lot of the work is done for you, moderating can really be a joy.
Okay, so I mean, obviously, you don't have to name like other names of like servers or anything, but like, how does it compare? Not like to Take This, but what is it like moderating in different spaces where the rules might be different? There might be different like considerations.
Sure.
Is it possible to get those wired confused? I just find moderation really interesting. Just it's general.
Yeah, you totally can get them confused. And I think one key thing about moderating is you have to have a good relationship with the human or entity that you are moderating for, because really you are an extension of them. And so it's what things are they looking for? What kind of community are they looking to cultivate?
Sorry, my brain was
And
still
so I would
processing
never mo
human or entity, and that was just a part of my brain just really wandered off there. I apologize. I had like a
That's
really
okay.
vacant look on my face, like in the video, that's just me just like twilight zoning in my own brain.
That's okay. Sometimes you just need a little time to process. I would never moderate for somebody whose values were really different from mine. I would say take this ranks pretty high on the on the rules front. So maybe some other places that I moderate for are a little bit looser, which can be difficult because I'm here keeping the reins pretty tight in the Take This Discord, whereas like some other folks who I moderate for might allow things that are maybe not allowed in the Take This Discord. And so sometimes I have to pull myself back and say, actually, that's okay here.
I think it's interesting. I mean, even like within myself, you know, I took a lot of when I sort of got into the content arena, I looked at what was around me and looked at what I enjoyed most and what I wanted to facilitate and grow in my own community, what my own space. I always like to shout out streamer Death Unites Us. Like, he runs a completely family friendly stream, and has like a whole host of great rule sets in there. And but sort of between that and the Take This space and a few other sort of people I was speaking to, I kind of built what I felt was the best version that I could produce out of those. But I find like just having a stream where, you know, I do sometimes play games that have like an 18 certificate and might like, you know, say include strong language or, you know, themes and stuff like that. But I just find like having like a, yeah, like let's not have everyone effing and jeffing in the chat and on the Discord. Like it removes a lot of the, I think, potential aggression that can come from using swear words. And you know, even the podcast, like swearing is allowed. I've never had a guest come on it as swearing every other sentence. Like, there is a little explicit button I can tick. It's not a big deal. And like, the stream is the kind of thing someone might just have on while they're doing something else. Podcasting is maybe a little bit more intentional. I make the stream more family friendly. But it's just funny that like I kind of like self-moderate in that way. But if you've spoken to me in my personal life, I literally swear like a sailor slash trucker slash docker, depending on your preferred geographical iteration of
Yes,
that.
yeah, me me as well. I do too. Yeah. But
I mean,
I think,
we've hung out, so we know this about each other, but.
Yeah, so you gotta I don't know, you put on a different hat when you're in those spaces. And yeah, I think one, don't, what is the phrase? Don't,
Stop me
gosh, I
now.
can't think of it, but the idea is to, if things seem like they would work for you, like rules, obviously don't borrow people's content or don't borrow the things that they produce. But if they've got a rule written that you think suits your values and your community, I don't see why you can't borrow that. Or, oh, hey, I kind of like what they're doing over here with, I don't know, yeah, like rules and expectations. And I think, borrow some of
I
those.
think.
And it's a living thing too. It's nothing you have to, you don't write the rules, set it in stone. You can make changes as your community grows and different things come up.
I've already mentioned Bob Ross once this episode, but I'm gonna mention him again. But it's like I kind of look at it as like it's my world. I can make it the world that I want and I think looks best. And if my world is like a family-friendly space, like where I don't, I'm not, you know, I do okay. So I can't stop it. The occasional swear does come out. I've gone like, sorry, what did I just say? Apologies. Sugar, honey, iced tea. You know what I mean? I'm, you know, I'm human. But like, because I can choose what I accept, like I, you know, my space isn't for everyone. Because if that was true, I would allow things that I wasn't comfortable with. But like, I'll happily go off about like politics because I'm an extremely, like, you know, I was on strike the other week. You know what I mean? I'm, you know, that tells you what my political views are. I don't mind sharing them. Because we can do that in a healthy and safe, responsible way. But like, if you are someone that has like, I don't know, bigoted opinions, you're not welcome in my chat. Please move along. There is another stream where you can go do that, and it's not mine.
Right.
You, as a content creator, have that choice.
Yeah. And I think, like, when you're building your community and then adding a level of moderation, sharing those values as explicitly as possible to make sure that you and your moderators are on the same page is really important.
Mm-hmm. All right, excellent. As I say, moderation is really interesting. I think it's something that, like, it's like one of those things that, like, you know it's in the car engine, but you're not necessarily sure, like, which bit it is or what it does, but you know you'd be sad if it wasn't working.
Sure, absolutely. Yeah, that's me in, like, every car part in the car.
I can't drive, so, you know, I just hope that I get to the destination I'm hoping to, and we do that. Don't get me started on British trains at the moment, okay? Wow.
Okay.
Big yikes. No one needs that conversation. Let me like look at. I do have a question list. We're just referencing this.
Sure.
Okay. Excellent. All right. Let's just envelop this. Let's keep going with our conversation. Let's keep enjoying it. One of the things I would love to know is, obviously we know what you do for work and we know what you do for fun.
Yep.
But I always like to think of if you could, like, really enhance one of those things, like if you just had, like, a way to magic wand it. It's always, again, kind of framed in a context question. But if you could do any project, you had access to unlimited resources, people, expertise, time, money, what is one project that you would like to do?
Oh, my gosh. No limitations. I would have, I think, some kind of service that would function like a library, where it was staffed with social workers and nurses and community members of art expertise, gaming expertise, sports expertise, and it was just a place where people could go to learn new skills, to get support, to exist safely.
Mario's come to join us. I apologize.
Oh, excellent. I love that. Something like that, some kind of like community center where people could come and get things that they needed and just exist safely.
Beautiful. I love that. That's just like so succinct. Again, like, you know, I look disinterested because I was trying to faff with the dog, but that sounds like really good. Do you have what you would call it? Do you know what you'd name it? Do you have like a snazzy name?
I don't. Naming things is really hard.
It is. So, you know, like whenever you have to like name a character in a game, like I'm so bad at it. I'm just like,
naming characters are a little easier, but like naming organizations, naming projects. I really love Psyched to Be With You. So good. I think like naming something is it's a very important task. I think I don't know.
I'll sometimes like reference like blind psyche and then like forget that I haven't told people that I'm legally blind and do psychology, and like that's why it's funny. Psyche, like what is he going on about? What is he talking about? Like what on earth?
Yeah.
And I'm like, no, it makes sense. It's punny. Like that's why it's good.
It is. It's good.
Okay, excellent. Have you had any really sort of like wild moments and like particularly like TTRPG? And I'm thinking like firstly, do you prefer being a player or a GM? That's always a good question. And like, have you had any like particular like wild moments?
Wild moments?
By I mean like exceptionally extravagant, where like you know, your trap has worked exceptionally, or you've like one shot a boss or something.
Can I tell? Actually, can it be a mental health and TTRPG story?
Yes, it can. Let's go.
So I was working in a program and running a game for the folks in that program. And one particular individual, on their paperwork, it said, basically this human is unable to take the perspectives of other people. And that's created a lot of problems in this person's life, and that they're just not able to do that.
I can imagine that would be quite challenging.
Right, right. So this person might, like, you know, they're not considerate. It disrupts a lot of their relationships. They might act in a self-serving kind of a way. And this was labeled as something that was very problematic for this person. Mm-hmm. And we're playing a game, and they're playing a character who's kind of a thief. And they meet this blacksmith. And there's a very special and beautiful sword hanging on the wall of this blacksmith's shop. And the player's eyeing it. I want this sword, right? So they do a couple of quests for this blacksmith. They're building a relationship with them. And this player has an opportunity to steal the dagger. And they've, you know, there's been many sessions where they've talked about it, and they finally have an opportunity to do it. And so they think about it, and ultimately they decided, well, if I stole this dagger and the blacksmith discovered it, he wouldn't give us quests anymore, and we wouldn't be able to work with him. He'd probably be pretty upset. And this is a human who's just completely unable to take the perspective of another person.
That's
and
pretty cool.
It brought me a lot of joy to throw that in the faces of the people who deemed this person completely unable to do a thing, right?
I 100% would have stolen the dagger and fear not the consequences.
Right, right. And as it is in so many games, you get like the murder tourist, right? Like the person that just goes through the town. Yeah, the murder tourist. So they visit a town and they just do whatever they want to do, no consequences. This is a game, it's pretend, I don't have to think about that, right?
Very like Westworld kind of thing.
Yeah, but this person, you know, like felt connected to the blacksmith after having built a relationship with them and didn't want to hurt that relationship. And so made a choice.
Okay.
And that served as evidence that it is possible for this person to understand the concept of perspective taking. And then I got to use that example with this person to do some of that practice work. And that always sticks out to me as like a really special TTRPG moment.
That's pretty exceptional, I'm not going to lie.
Yeah.
What type of sort of like player and or GM are you? Like, because I like mostly do it because I enjoy doing funny voices.
I'm not very good. I only have the one voice. So I don't do voices, and I dare not do accents for a variety of reasons. So what kind of a player am I? I'm a chaotic player.
Okay.
For sure. Not murder touristy, but definitely doing strange and funny things. And as a GM, I'm interested in the story we can tell together. And so I'll throw out the rules if something cool is going to happen.
Rule of cool. Am I right? Rule of cool. Let's do it.
Yeah.
Big fun.
I just want to tell a really interesting story. And so however that happens is cool with me.
Do you prefer to like crack open a module, or have you like ever gone like really like homebrew into it, or...
So it's different for every game. For Dungeons and Dragons, I've only done modules. Mm-hmm. Although I will often add my own stuff.
Yeah, you get like your meal, you season it.
Yeah, yeah. And so the same with Call of Cthulhu, is I've seasoned the meal, as you say. and for Kids on Bikes, I wrote my own story, and that was very fun.
Nice.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, excellent.
Yeah.
One of my other blue sky questions that I always like to ask is there anyone or anything that you'd like to like give a shout out to or like pay homage to? Because again, we talk about these journeys and how we get from where we started to where we are, like often in a professional sense, because that's what the show's kind of about, and also fun things. But I always like to give people the opportunity to just like shout out someone that like they think maybe could deserve a little bit more spotlighting.
Sure. I was thinking about this, and I think what I've landed on is the take this slash game to grow communities. You know, if you're anybody who's listening to you is probably aware or has heard those names at least a couple of times. But just how meaningful and how much I've gotten and been able to grow from being a part of those communities has been really meaningful and special. And so, if anybody listening to you who has not heard of them or checked them out, then I would just encourage them to do so because they're both doing different work in the same sphere, but it's very good stuff.
And if you don't follow the rules, Amanda will swing the banhammer. She's not afraid to do
It's
it.
true. I will.
Mod squad goals, just saying.
Yes. Yes.
Excellent. Another question I'd like to just sort of throw out there, because it kind of fits with the sort of mental health kind of game stuff that I kind of think about. But have you ever kind of had like a very are there any games that you like that you've had any like a like not you like you personally, but that you think are good at generating a very visceral kind of reaction? Because I kind of like have this like there's a subcategory of games that I like called beautiful games about death, that like are just so wonderful
Oh.
and kind of like tell this great story. And I'm like, there isn't really a genre for this, but I really enjoy them in the same way that like sci-fi dystopia obviously is a genre, but it's a bit more niche.
Yeah, beautiful games about death.
Any sort of games like sort of tickle that spot for you that isn't necessarily named?
Oh, that is a really good question.
This wasn't on the sheet as well. I'm chucking this at Amanda
It
just
wasn't
like
on the
because we're
sheet, and I
chatting.
wish it was on the sheet. Put this one on the sheet. Because this one deserves a thought out answer because I don't know if I can provide it right
For
now.
listeners' benefit,
I
I was
think
getting the full finger wag at the camera.
you.
I've just been told off on my own podcast, and I don't like it.
Yes. Yes, put this one on the sheet, please. The game that is on the tip of my tongue is Disco Elysium.
Oh, very nice. Okay.
As you know, a game that like really gut punched me in so many ways. And yeah. And then when you said beautiful games about death, I thought of what remains of Edith Finch immediately.
Okay,
That is a
excellent.
beautiful game about death. Yeah.
Yeah, excellent. Another cog has just turned in my own brain, because I remembered obviously we met at PAX, but you asked a really brilliant question on the, you can check this out on YouTube, Psychology of Final Fantasy VII Trauma and Recovery
Such
panel
a good panel.
that I had the
Yeah.
joy of moderating. Any panel I started where I could rip my own panelists was just a, I don't know now how I had the stones to do that live on air, but I'm so proud I went with it.
I think it was the suit.
It just went straight to my head, straight to my head.
Yeah.
But like you asked a great question about the music of Final Fantasy VII, which I mean the entire soundtrack is banger. I've got it on CD. I've got a selection of music from it on the vinyl. I've got this great double vinyl that is the original soundtrack and the remake soundtrack and selections of
Oh, that's really
both.
special.
Like, oof!
Yeah.
It folds out on like the sleeve. Again, I'll show you this before we sign off. But it's like it like you fold it out and it's like a Buster sword. It's just oh yeah,
Yeah,
it's so nice.
that's amazing.
So do you have like any other like favorite game soundtracks? Like what music are you into? Like
Oh, God, game soundtracks. Spiritfarer comes to mind as one of the most beautiful soundtracks I've ever heard. Child of Light
oh, Child of
also
Light's so
has
good.
an incredible, moving, transportive soundtrack. Yes, those two games stand out to me.
Excellent.
Beautiful and sad. Yes.
Yes, because you can't be
And the kind of
beautiful
music
without being sad.
I listen to lots of sad music. I like sad stuff. A bittersweet person I am. But probably the most music I listen to falls in the metal category.
Nice. Okay. Oh, so I recently discovered Ghost. We touched on this in the
Yeah, Ghosts
Discord,
are so
actually.
fun.
Ghost are really good. Like, very, very, like, you know,
Very good.
they're like, you know, satanic metal light. They're like great if you're
Yeah.
into rock but not super into metal. Like the vocals are very, very
Yeah.
good and the music is heavy but not too heavy.
Yes.
It's
Yes,
like a
absolutely.
cake and you cut into it and you go, oh, this might be quite dense this, and it's not, it's quite light and fluffy. which I don't think is a description Ghost will ever have had before, but I'm going with it.
They're metal, they're not quite metal, but lots of folks who listen to metal listen to them.
Yeah.
So yeah, they're a good bridge, I guess, kind of artist.
I'd say one of the heavier bands like I listen to are the Damn Things. Heard of them?
I haven't heard.
They're like a super group with other members that I can't remember, but like it has Andrew Haley and Joe Troman in from Fall Out Boy. And they're obviously one of my favorite bands.
Yeah.
So like they do, that's like slightly heavier kind of, you know, stuff. Gets a bit shouty.
Sure.
Quite like that. But I definitely say like I sort of sit in these sort of bluesy, kind of folky is like the home genre.
Yeah.
But like
that's
emo pop
too.
Punk for life, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, again, for totally. Those that haven't ever looked at the video of the podcast, like you can see several Fall Out Boy posters behind me. Like, it's a thing. Met the boys, you know, once. It's all good.
That's awesome.
I just really love music. Have you got any like recommendations that you'd give? Anything to, like, check out?
Recommendations for music?
What are you listening to at the minute?
I guess if you love metal, Alcest and Kardashev are two of my favorite bands. I think they are they're beautiful, they're sad, they're heavy, they're very moody, atmospheric. Those would be my two like favorite bands, I would say.
I kind of love like the idea of like almost like a sketch of like, you know, like you're in your therapist's office, you're having these deep moving conversations, people are in tears because they're moved by the progress they've made, and you know, you kind of hand them a tissue and you leave the office, you get headphones on, like you're on the bus, you just hit play, and, like all you can hear is like rah, 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 kind of like noise, like you're like, like,
yeah.
Like the viewers can't hear it, like someone asks you a question like, oh, like is this seat taken, and you take the headphone out, it's just noise, and then it's like,
yeah,
no, it's all right, you know what? I'll find somewhere else to sit.
Like, yeah, I would say both of those bands do feature some of the noise, like screaming, like wall of noise that you're talking about, but also have a lot of beautiful moments, and so maybe might feel less threatening than some other metal might feel to a human who doesn't like metal.
The only reason I said it is because, again, like for listeners' benefit, like, you know, you've said so many wholesome things in the episode so far. You look like such a friendly person, smiling away and sort of stuff. I just kind of love that disconnect of like noise coming out of your earphones. Just like,
right. I think that speaks to like the complexities of people, and so like, and also kind of shakes up what you think you know, right? Like when you picture a person who listens to metal, you might picture a person who's like, who's maybe more angry, a little bit more tough exterior, right? Maybe not somebody who's bubbly and cheerful, and like, I don't know,
a therapist.
I think that's like kind of cool stuff. You never really know. You don't really know, and so to make a judgment of like, I don't know, talking about like fringe populations, right? Like you when you think of somebody maybe who's a member of the kink community, you have this image of I don't know, a wild person, but they're just like anybody else. And you, the things that you do and you love are a part of who you are, but don't tell the whole story.
That's true. I mean, I say this, and like I listen to a whole bunch of music, like from like,
yeah,
you know what I mean? Like why, like it's like going to a buffet table and going, I'm just gonna have the like the honeydew melon and nothing else. Also, honeydew, awful melon, low tier, watermelon, top tier.
It's a low tier fruit.
That's like fruit. A low key, like people that know BoJack Horseman, their ears just pricked up. Like,
I'll co-sign that opinion on melons for sure.
But like, you know, I want to sample the whole buffet. Like, give me all the music. You know.
Yeah.
One of the things I'm going to say this tentatively, but I mentioned the teach class, and I test the audio equipment on the computer every week before class starts, because I like to make sure that all the equipment is working appropriately should I need it. by playing music on YouTube. And I like to test different music every week that the class may not have heard. And then I sort of say, this is what was playing when I was testing the audio, finger quotes.
Yeah.
So I like to expand your musical horizons that way. Do some different
stuff. That's fun. Yeah.
You know.
Nice personal touch on the class. It's good stuff.
That, and it just breaks up the really awkward silence. They all just shuffle in and sit on their computers.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah.
Just sit there, I'm just at my desk, just like eating an apple or something, and just sit down.
As teachers do.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I eat an apple a day just because I like apples, but it is a trope that I also teach, and, you know, I enjoy vitamins and a healthy colon.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Don't know why I went there. I honestly, like, if I edited this show, that's the kind of crap I would edit out. But
yeah.
I live and die by the fact that I say really silly things, and I just accepted that's who I am, and we roll with it.
I love that for you and for me.
Just, you know, if I can't laugh at myself, I don't have a right to laugh at anyone else. You know what I mean?
Fair enough.
So, getting towards the end of my scheduled questions, I always like to throw out this beautiful idea of you're going to a biodome of your choice for a retreat. And you're allowed to take with you, just going to double check the list again, one film, one album, one book, and one video game. What are you taking?
Oh, okay.
And this was on the list, you can't act surprised.
That's true, but you didn't phrase it that way on the list. So I wrote down different, my answers will change. I can take one movie, I'm taking Beetlejuice.
Okay, so I should preface. You can have, if it's in a physical collection, like if you can get it as a collection, you can have that. So, like, you know, you can get the entirety of, like, Game of Thrones in a physical collection. You know, stuff like
that. Sure.
Mario's jumping about. He's having a very energetic
meeting. No, that's fine. We love dog visitors or pet visitors. My film would still be Beetlejuice.
Excellent choice.
I stand by that. My album would probably be right now Liminal Right by Kardashev, which is like one of my favorite bands right now. My book, oh my gosh, what would my book be? I think one of my favorite books that I've read recently is Ninth House by Leigh Bardugo. I would take that one because that one's really fun.
Okay, what is that?
And one video game?
Ninth
House by Leigh Bardugo. Yeah, it's a mystery, supernatural, powerful woman character. And the video game I would take would be Stardew Valley, hands down. It's my favorite game.
Oh, nice. Okay, that's excellent. I love, like, people take such radical approaches. They either go for a game that is, like, endless, like Stardew, like a game that they can just play for infinity, or a game that they know they could replay a million times. They're the two kind of, or like that one game they haven't finished yet, and like, I'll get around to this, and that's where I'm going to do it. Out of interest,
interesting.
What is the dynamic of the biodome that you go to?
Cozy.
What season is it? What's the weather like? Because a lot of people say tropical island, and I, for one, wouldn't go to a tropical island. That's not me.
No.
It's not for me. Love that forever, enjoys it.
It's New England in October, so it's like low 60s, colorful trees, pumpkins everywhere.
So in British for like October, you're talking, you know, October, seasonally nice. It's like 10 degrees Celsius. Like it's cold enough you can put a cardigan on or that nice jacket, but you don't need to zip it up. You know.
That's what I'm talking about. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you get all the knitwear fashion without the need for, like, you know, feeling that you're cold.
Yes, exactly that.
Big fan of knitwear and just jumpers in general, jumpers and hoodies.
Yeah, yep. I'm not a tropical gal either, so it would be autumn in New England, so foliage, cool weather, that sort of thing.
So, again, I'm just going to probe this in there because I think it's going to be good content, which is all I care about. No, I care about my guests. But you are a bit of a spooky gal.
Yeah.
You love spooky season. You
I
have
do.
some incredible spooky season decor that I've seen on the Take This Discord. Why is spooky season your favorite? Is there a reason at all?
Is there a reason?
Is it just the colours, the oranges and the browns and whatnot? Me
I don't
fully
know. It's hard.
exploiting my own podcast for the questions I've wanted to ask, could have asked, but just never have.
Why am I so drawn to it? I don't know. I don't know. It's just my heart song.
You can just like it. That's a perfectly valid
answer.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's just my heart song.
I just never thought to ask until right now.
Yeah.
That's it.
Fair enough.
Okay, excellent. Is there anything else that you would like to say before we round off to the end of the episode? Anything, any stone that you don't feel we've covered? Any ground that you wish to tread? Any funny jokes?
No funny jokes.
Ah.
Probably just thank you for having me. This is really fun.
Oh, you're welcome. It's fine. You know me, like to spotlight the peeps, like to provide people with great conversations. That's all it's about.
Yeah.
This is starting off season 3 hot. You know, it's a big deal. You're setting the bar high.
I feel honored.
Setting the bar high. The last question I have for you then is, do you have any questions for me? I like to turn the tables on myself and give you the power to host. I have had the biodome question a couple of times. I've been asked what my PhD is doing a couple of times, so I would advise avoiding those for listeners' benefit. But anything you'd like to ask?
Feel free to ask for another question if this has been done before. But the question that comes to mind is, who is one bucket list podcast guest?
Ooh, that is a good question. I don't know, because I'm really lucky, because I've had many of the people I would cite as like heroes, like on the podcast already. Very, very lucky in that regard. I think
that's really cool.
Oh gosh, one person I think I'd like to have on that I don't think, like, I think trying to maybe like arrange it would be really difficult, partly just because like I'm a few like degrees of freedom away from them. Degrees of freedom,
sure,
this is not stats class, you know. Degrees of separation, that's the word.
Yeah.
What I think I would love to sit down and talk to is probably like B. Dave Walters.
Oh, yes.
Like, you know,
yes,
I did through a third party that shall remain nameless, but I did pitch the idea to Dr. B that him and B. Dave Walters need to do a podcast called Two Bees in a Pod. That never got
My
any traction.
God.
That never got any traction.
That is a darn shame.
But I think that.
I love that idea. Yeah. I think they'd have plenty of things to talk about.
So that would be, I think, like, B-Day.
Love that answer.
Great.
Yeah.
Because I've seen, like, yeah, obviously I know him from Twitter. He's very funny, very wholesome.
Very wholesome, stands up for really important things. Humble, funny. Yeah, I would, yeah, absolutely.
I've watched, like, his, like, a TTRPG masterclass stuff that, like, he released.
Yeah.
Like a little, like, it was like he made it free, like, I pay what you want, so like via his Ko-fi and stuff. So I really enjoyed like watching that and felt like it improved me as a player and GM. But I think like he'd be really cool. And obviously we've had like a Jen Kretschmer on the show in season 2, like professional TTRPG player. She was amazing. Got the pleasure of working with Jen before. But that's one that I feel like I'm not sure if I could physically make that happen without like cold calling and hoping for the best.
Yeah. I love that. That's a great answer.
That like, you know, I'm gonna give you a little. That was such a good question. If you'd like to ask another one, feel free.
Because
that felt like very like businessy.
A businessy question. So
no, like that
would
one
you
felt
like a more
quite businessy. Like oh, this is about the show. Like.
Yeah. You all. I am on your show.
This is true.
So I wanted to know more about your show. Another question.
I've got the listeners like, he's gone rogue.
Is there
the last two
questions? So here's another podcast question. What is there a podcast that you would love to be a guest on?
Oh, okay. This is totally, totally self-serving. I'm going to give a double answer because I can. It's my show. I can do whatever.
Yeah.
I want. I'd love to be on the Psychology of Games podcast hosted by Jamie Madigan. Also been on the show. When I've like actually done some games research would be great. So I have something to talk to him about. That would be, I'd know I've peaked then because that's pretty much where I met all the great people that I have met. Like, it took me to take this. It took me to games to grow. Like, you know, that was, I did thank him for this when I spoke to him. Big byplay from there. But I would also personally love to be on, in some capacity, Revisionist History by Malcolm Gladwell.
What is that one?
So it's like events in history like that have been like, that are remembered wrong is probably the easiest way to think about it. It's very thought-provoking. There's ones like one of the... There's one... My brain is like going and I'm saying things instead of thinking. So there's a really early one, like in the early seasons, about like a basketball player that what did they do? They like shot differently. They didn't do it like over, they shot like under or something. No, that was it. They did throws underneath, which is within the laws of basketball. They had like this ridiculously high score percentage, but just everyone's like, what are you doing? That's weird. And stopped the player doing it. And it's like, if we'd all just adopted underarm throwing for basketball, it would look more funky, but there'd be more points. And just stuff like that, how like when you actually look at some of the stats and the data, like things are not the way we think they are. So I'd love to be involved that, like if he ever did like an investigation to like video game research and how history kind of got that one wrong.
Sure. Yeah, that'd be really fascinating.
I'd be behind the queue of people like Dr. Rachel Coet, Dr. Kelly Dunlap. You know, I'd be in line, but I think, you know.
Yeah.
That'd be really cool.
That would be really cool.
All right, excellent. That was a great duo of questions. Big fan of that. That's me. I don't have anything else to ask. I guess if you want to speak to Amanda anymore, get on one of the Discords that you manage.
Yeah.
Again, Banhammo warning. It will be wielded. Wielded?
Be wielded.
Is wielded a welded? No, that's welding's a different
welded? Name. Wield?
To be.
Yeah, that's a great
question. Wondus wield. Words. It's, you know, English is.
They're hard.
English is not my first language. First language is Scouse, so I try. I speak five languages.
Talking to you long enough, I get that joke.
Scouse, English, academic, geek, and then nerd if you throw. No, sorry, IT if you're throwing that in there. I know what IT, a RAM is. Yep,
very different.
GPUs and all that. You know, I know the difference between my D20 and my RTX 360. You know what I mean?
There you go.
Someone's gone, that's a great joke. One listener's gone, I get that. That Venn diagram of like people that play D&D and build computers. Not massive, but it's there.
It's definitely there. For sure.
Okay. This has been great. I've enjoyed it. I hope you have as well.
I did. It was so fun. Thank you so much.
We all learned a heck of a lot more about what therapy can look like. I think that's something that is greatly beneficial for everyone. As ever, if you want more information on the show and all the rest of the other wholesomeness, I nearly said wholeness. Again, it's Sunday. Check out all the links. Wherever you find this episode, they're always attached, all these things. But all that remains for me to do, say goodbye and say thanks for listening to the listeners, the viewers watching along at home, and obviously to you, my very special guest, Amanda. Thanks so much for being part of it.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been a pleasure.
Absolute kickoff to season 3. I love it. This has been great. And we'll catch you next time for the next episode. Until then, as ever, look after your mind, body, and soul. Bye-bye. Well, thank you so much for listening to another episode of Psyched to Be With You. I really hope you enjoyed it as much as I did. As ever, if you did enjoy it, please leave a review wherever you listen to your podcasts. It really, really helps. If you want to keep up with all things Blind Psyche, check out the episode description for a link, or you can go direct to linktr.ee/blindpsyche. Thank you so much for listening. As ever, look after your mind, body, and soul, and I will see you again very, very soon. Bye-bye.